Tom, after only a couple weeks of having cable,
yeah.
I'm already ready to bite on the Girls Gone Wild video.
You're watching all the wrong channels on cable.
Not watching the educational ones, that for sure. You're set for an educational couple of minutes here because it's time for the trade. It's Thursday, June 13th, 2002 from Capital's Pig Asset Management. I'm Jonathan Honig.
And I'm Tom Hudson at WebFN.
Our guest host today, I can't imagine Dave Edwards has the Girls Gone Wild video. Do you, Dave?
Oh, of course.
Of course. He's got the whole library. Well, Dave, of course, is president and portfolio manager of Heron Capital Management in New York City. Of course, you've read his work on thestreet.com, among other places. Lots to talk about, guys. A little later in the show, we're going to ask the question, how do you control risk in your portfolio? Is it smaller position sizes? Is it diversification? We'll also talk about why don't more people pay close attention to the market? I mean, Tom, you know, on the news, you know, the sports gets 7-10 minutes.
Sure. The weather gets 7 or 10 minutes.
And if maybe they mention, oh, the Dow was up XYZ, you know, the least important average of them all. We'll also talk about some stocks that won't let you down. But let's start with the queen of clean, Martha Stewart, on the hot seat these days. And Tom, you're the news guy, so I'll let you handle the story. But apparently she is being accused or under suspicion for some insider trading.
Well, she's not even been accused of it, nor is she under suspicion. It's just kind of the reputation at this point is getting tarnished because a former boyfriend of Ms. Stewart's, a guy by the name of Sam Waxel, who used to be the CEO over at a company called ImClone, a biotechnology firm, well, he got in trouble for insider selling. He is the one that actually faces the federal charges. Now, Martha Stewart sold just under 4,000 shares of ImClone the day before
it was learned
an experimental colon cancer drug that ImClone was working on was going to be rejected by the Food and Drug Administration.
And she was out with a statement, obviously, yesterday denying all.
I did not speak to Dr. Waxel regarding my sale and did not have any non-public information regarding ImClone when I sold my ImClone shares, is the quote from Ms. Stewart.
Still, that association took down Martha Stewart $2 yesterday. Dave, you like the stock here, MSO? I mean, you seem kind of like a doily and I don't know. I mean, do you subscribe to the magazine? Maybe someone in your family?
This is actually not a stock I've ever owned. It's pretty expensive, even for a paper publishing stock. I don't put a lot of value either way on this ImClone connection. I think it'll be forgotten about by next week. I don't own it. I wouldn't buy it at this level.
What about the value of a brand? I mean, you know, I'll get a little Warren Buffett on us here. You know, you can't just go and invent Martha Stewart, Tom. And she is a lifestyle brand that translates to any number of products. She's got the TV and the newspaper and the advertising and the products and the Kmart.
And this is the thing. I mean, yeah, it is kind of sullying her reputation at this point. But Dave, I agree with you. I think this whole thing's going to blow over, just as some of the concern about the Kmart bankruptcy blew over. You know, we're seeing the stock here trade at $15 a share, which is near those January levels immediately after the Kmart bankruptcy. There's a lot of questions like, oh, it's going to bring down Martha Stewart as well. Well, the fact is Martha Stewart is much more of a media company than it is a drapery company or a clothing company, if you can even go that far. It really sells advertising. The Martha Stewart magazine, the Martha Stewart TV show, absolutely.
You wouldn't buy the stock here.
I would not buy the stock, but Dave, I kind of tend to argue with you here. I think it looks relatively cheap if you want to look at it as a media stock, maybe as a publishing stock, it looks expensive, but not as a media company.
Chart doesn't look too encouraging. What's up, Nina?
Guys, I have a question. You know, one of Martha Stewart's defenses is that she spoke with her broker and they talked about selling the stock when it got below 60.
Right. It sounds like it was a stop loss order.
And she sold it at 58.
If it wasn't an actual stop loss, it sounds like a stop loss that was discussed, an informal stop loss. Shouldn't her broker have paperwork that can sort of just, you know, prove her case?
I would expect that would be so.
Well, not necessarily. It's a NASDAQ stock. You wouldn't be able to put in a stop-loss order on it. You know, maybe the broker can dig up some emails or some correspondence, but generally it would be a phone conversation. It wouldn't be anything written down. Maybe they could find the trading log, trading tapes.
Martha Stewart, OmniMedia. None of us are buyers at these levels. Down 210 yesterday to $15 a share. Well, from Tyco to Enron to ImClone, there is a crisis of confidence out there. Do I sound like Ron and Sana?
It's pretty good.
Crisis of confidence facing. So what are some stocks, Dave, that you're buying right now or you're even looking at that aren't going to let us down?
I mentioned this a month ago. I'll say it again. The real estate investment trusts.
I'm with you on there. Give us some areas of
anywhere from 6.5% to 10%, depending on which one. It's tangible assets. You can go out and look at the buildings or the shopping malls. Interest rate sensitivity, not so bad. It's a good, safe place to be for now.
Give us some specifics.
Boston Properties, Vornado Real Estate.
Is that VOD is Vornado?
VNO. Oh, VNO. Vornado. ADC is shopping malls. Crescent Real Estate, CEI. you pick one apartment, one shopping mall, one office, you're done.
Build yourself a little portfolio here.
Diversification there, absolutely.
It's funny, 3 or 4 years ago, if you started, you know, talking about the merits of a dividend yield, people would have said, who cares about a dividend yield?
Right. Making, give me capital appreciation.
Right, but back income-oriented stocks are back in vogue in a big way.
Well, I mean, you talk about crisis of confidence that we're having with corporate governance, with accounting, with even some of the federal regulators at this point. You want some security there. And listen, if the markets are going to chew around here, talking about a couple of points gain every day or a couple of points losses every day, give me some of that dividend yield and a secure dividend yield at that.
And I always want to be argumentative with our guests. I want to be like, oh, you're crazy. But Dave, I think you're really, you're in the right ballpark here. Strong on the charts, under-owned. I talk to a lot of even real estate professionals who say, oh, real estate is done. You know, it's just a matter of time before the bubble bursts. And that's the kind of psychology to me that builds a bull market, yeah. Right? And bull markets are built on the back of doubt, not on hope.
And I think the more exciting thing, and we mentioned this before earlier on the show this week, is the under-owned aspect of real estate investment trusts and the fact that markets are now looking at dividend yields as a reason to buy.
Have you bought yet? Before the show, Tom was like,
funds? That's right. I'm looking at names right now is what we're doing. And actually, I've seen a lot more analyst research come across my desk within the past couple of weeks about healthcare real estate investment trusts, yep, or shopping malls or outlet mall real estate investment trusts.
Dave, isn't a problem with a lot of these REIT funds is that they tend to be overweight in like the two Sam Zell properties, the EOP and the EQRs?
As I said, you pick three REITs that are different geographical spread, focus on different sectors of the real estate market, and then you're okay.
A couple of the exchange traded funds to keep in mind. RQI, I think, is one. Yeah, that's Conan Steers, whatnot. And then there's, of course, IYR is the iShares. But again, got to keep, be careful there because those funds tend to be really overweight in EQR and EOP. Tom, what are you buying that's not going to let you down?
Well, one that
besides the Girls Gone Wild video.
Absolutely. You know what? I'd probably be let down by that, to be honest with you. PepsiCo here.
PEP.
I think it's got strong management. It has had a great bench to go to with that strong management. Hell of a strong brand name there in all across its properties, the Frito-Lay chips, the PepsiCo, the Tropicana. Now add Quaker Oats and Gatorade to that. You've got strong growth, a good story here, smooth integration of its recent purchase of Quaker Oats, I think spells good things. And it's combining its North American beverage operations, trying to really solidify that place. And I think it's just a strong story here in a strong brand in a strong sector.
You own it, Dave?
I don't own it, but consumables, yeah, always a safe place to be.
Yeah, and on
tough market.
I'll chime in here. I like the real estate investment trust as well. Strong, just everything about them I like. I mean, go to the message boards on Yahoo. You'll see, 10,000 messages posted about Cisco in the last 15 minutes, but maybe, a half a dozen in the last 2 weeks about some of the major real estate investment trusts. I love that kind of lack of buzz. I also think, Tom, a lot of these non-U.S. bond funds still have room to run. We've talked about FACTS. I'll add to that list FCO. That's basically a Euro play there. And GHI is another global income fund that I like very much at these levels. It's up 10% year to date. Well, we had a question for Nina this morning from our friend Gavin Street on the boards. And the one I'll junk to, Nina, is how much attention, Nina, do you pay to the markets? I mean, is it just an afterthought when it comes to your job?
Well, it's not an afterthought, but it is the job. It's not my passion like it's Mr. Honig's passion.
Or Mr. Edwards' passion. I mean, Dave, if the market is so important, more and more people involved in the market, even through mutual funds or direct ownership, why don't more people, in your estimation, pay closer attention to the day-to-day movements of their stocks?
Well, I live here in New York City, and if you walk through Midtown, every third store window has CNBC or Fox Financial News going on. You walk into your shoeshine guy, and he's got CNBC going on. So maybe it's just New York City, but we pay an awful lot of attention to the market here.
I don't know, Tom. Maybe that is just the urban centers, because you talk to a lot of people, and I think they'd still say, GE is still a good stock for the long haul, XYZ. Meanwhile, this is a stock that's down almost 40% in the last 12 months.
Well, someone up on the boards, mentioned a neighbor of theirs is a broker, and they're talking about buying JP Morgan, about General Electric here, the good old good ones here, going back to the hits.
You were talking a bit also when we were in our pre-market meeting about being involved with the market doesn't necessarily mean trading in the market every day, but more being knowledgeable about what's going on in the market.
Yeah, understanding many what's going on in the market.
But what does that mean? Does that mean like every big news story you know about and you've read in on about it?
No. Does that mean? Listen, I think it gets back to the definition of being an active money manager. I mean, you can be an active money manager and not be in the market every day,
and not make a trade for weeks.
Not make a trade for months, perhaps. Right. I mean, you certainly have to be aware of what positions you have in this market and what could be and what the risks are and what risks you're willing to stomach, what your time horizon is. Is it a year? Is it 2 years? Is it 6 months? Is it 2 months for that matter? And you control some of that risk, and we're going to talk about that with some of those position sizes as well as, you know, what you're willing to stomach at this point. I think calling the financial services industry the financial services industry is an oxymoron. It's not a services industry. The way they service a lot of clients, and Dave, I'm not speaking for you, and I'm not talking about, you know, hedge funds or some of the other larger funds, but when talking about some of the larger brokerage houses, financial services is defined as, I'm going to tell you what to buy.
Right.
I'm not going to tell you when you should sell or how you should sell or what positions you should completely ignore. I'm just going to tell you what to buy and when to buy.
And getting back to this idea, too, of, you know, how involved you should be in the market. I was at a Cubs game. You ever been to a Cubs game there, Dave?
No.
Yeah, it's a great, you know, night out, especially, I know that the lights are still a fairly recent phenomenon. It's about, 10 years ago now?
10, 20.
20. Come on, they haven't had lights at Wrigley.
1985?
Was that 20 years ago?
Pretty close to it.
Oh, my God. Well, I was at a Cubs game the other night, and I was thinking about what's the difference between the spectators and the players. The players are watching the game.
Sure.
The spectators are watching the other spectators. They're looking for the concessions guy. They're, you know, looking up at the scoreboard or the skyline. You want to be a player in this game. It doesn't mean you're always going to touch the ball, but it means you want to be focused on what's happening, the action in the market. And, it's just like baseball, the market, people. Just keep your eye on the ball. Well, yesterday we were speaking with Jim Oberweis from Oberweis Securities, talking a bit about controlling risk, especially these days, and especially amongst some of the smaller capitalized names. Dave, how do you like to control risk in the portfolios that you run?
I have some pretty rigid rules about risk management. First off, we never put more than 25% of a portfolio in any one sector, be it technology, healthcare, financial services, et cetera. And that was so critical over the last couple of years. We own a lot of the same stocks that the Janus Group owns, but you look at their situation, returns down 30%, assets off 50% in the last 2 years. The big difference between us and them is that we had max 25% technology. They had max 60% technology. That's where they got screwed. Risk rule number two, we have at least 32 stocks, preferably 40 stocks in a portfolio. It's like a baseball team you're just talking about. You have nine guys, they're going to go up, they're going to swing. Some are going to hit, some are going to miss. You don't know at the start of the game which is going to be, but at least if you have nine players, you've got your risk spread out a little bit.
Some diversification there.
And generally, an introductory initial position is going to be no more than 2 or 2.5%. No matter how much you love the stock, no matter how carefully you've researched it, there's not that much edge you're going to have over somebody else. A stock that goes from 2.5% to zero, that's not the end of the world. A stock that starts out at 10% of a portfolio goes to zero, that's a big problem. You can't make that back.
I totally agree.
What's the maximum exposure you'll have in any one stock?
If I have a stock that runs away, be it Quest Diagnostics or Dell, and it hits 10% of the portfolio, we automatically sell half.
Oh, so you shave those winners as well. I mean, Dave, I totally agree with you. A lot of people say to me, what do you think of XYZ? Or what do you think? I say, you know what? You can make a buy or a bullish or bearish argument for every single stock. Buy it if you're bullish, but just don't put more than 2, 3, 4% of your portfolio into any one trade. I mean, isn't that what sinks most people is that they don't just love a stock, but they go ahead and dump at one price at that, 30% of their
50%,
assets.
50%, right. I want to be 60% in this stock or 60%. And Dave, as you mentioned, then you get overweighted in one particular sector. Because, I've got four or five stocks in my portfolio. Well, they all happen to be, box makers. They all happen to be networkers. They all happen to be cable companies or telecommunication network providers.
Here's another issue. If you have only 10 stocks in your portfolio, one starts to do badly, you tend to focus all your energy on that one stock, watching it go down.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have 40 stocks, one starts to go down, it doesn't have the same psychological pain. So, cut that one and move on.
Yeah, what also, kind of piggybacking off that move is that I find that, a lot of people, they have 10 stocks. One's a huge position that starts to do badly. What they do is they sell off all their winning stocks and hold on to the underperforming one, waiting for it to come back. And isn't that, Tom, what sunk this Sam Waxell, is that it wasn't just that he had a lot of money in Enclone, but he had this huge huge margin position in Emcolon. I mean, he was servicing something like, you know, $800,000
in
margin debt.
Wow, was it that big?
Yeah, every single month. I mean, a huge position.
And the same deal with Bernard Ebers at WorldCom. He had all of his net worth in WorldCom on margin.
Yeah.
And so as it went down, how much time did he spend running the company?
Right. And the one thing that we talked about with the implosion of Enron, with all those poor employees, talked about, well, they had 80% of their 401k plan in Enron stock. I mean, not only were their immediate fortunes tied to the company's fortunes, their retirement was also retired to the fortunes. And, you know, let's face it, even these CEOs aren't beyond making those mistakes.
Yeah, so
nine times out of ten, when I have a new client portfolio, the major focus of the first year is reducing single stock exposure.
Shaving those positions down. It's good advice. You know, time I'm over at the Girls Gone Wild video .com homepage here. Two for only $9.95. Could I chalk this up as research for the show, Nina?
Maybe if you tell us, you know, who the corporate owner is, maybe the distributor of that lovely video.
Listen, there's always a bull market somewhere. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate your time this morning.
Have your horns on your side of the table.
Dave Edwards has been our guest. Dave is president and portfolio manager with Heron Capital Management in New York City. You've read him on thestreet.com and seen him appearing on CNBC and other media outlets. Hope he'll join us once again. For Tom Hudson, I'm Jonathan Honig. Hope you'll join us at the Clear Station message board. I saw some new posts, some new faces, some new names over there. We'll have to see what's on everyone's mind. So please join us. It's clearstation.com. Our board is called Talk of the Trade. For Tom Hudson, once again, I'm Jonathan Honig. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys tomorrow for the Friday edition of The Trade.
Before we go, our lawyers wanted us to tell you a few things about the show. The opinions expressed are those of our contributors and not necessarily those of E-Trade Group Incorporated. Please keep in mind that these opinions do not constitute investment advice or recommendations from E-Trade Securities or E-Trade Group. Not all investments or investment strategies are suitable for all customers. Before you transact, get the facts. Do your research before you make any investment decision. This has been a production of E-Trade Group Incorporated. Copyright 2002, all rights reserved.